Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Brother Ben, from the battlefield city of La Crosse, Wisconsin. And it is Throwback Thursday today. We are going to read the Passion and Purity book. So part 10. We've done 10 shows on it already. It's pretty crazy. Wow. An interesting thing, too, yesterday I actually was able to have a moment to preach. It was a all of a sudden kind of thing. Excuse me. It was an all of a sudden kind of thing, the opportunity to preach, although I made it more of a open discussion. We just talked about Christian ideas, and you know, it actually went pretty well. I'm kind of surprised by that. There are certain things I couldn't say the best, but there are certain things that I was able to explain pretty well, too. And actually, the teams did a good job participating. They actually, some of them actually made some good responses themselves and were very well thought out and well detailed. And I'm just like, wow, I'm impressed. So it was the Lord made it work, you know. The Lord made it a good idea there. Sometimes that kind of stuff is needed to be able to just, just talk out your faith, you know. We were able to talk to each other about it and to be able to grow from that. And I think it really was a good night. So cool beans. But we're going to talk today about passion and purity. We're going to continue that book today, which I've been enjoying. It's been pretty neat to get that female perspective in regards to Christianity. But let's get right to it. So we last left off at chapter 24, which is... We're over halfway done. I'd say, let's see, what's the last chapter of this book? 43, okay, so 43 chapters, and we're at chapter 24. That means, yeah, we've got about 19 more chapters to read, and then we're done with this book, pretty much. We'll have to pick some new books. Maybe you can give me a suggestion on what I should read if I have the copy of it, or... At the very least, I'll do the dice roll again. But, let's get right to it. We're at chapter 24. Hot sweats and wet feet. Excuse me. It costs Christ and all his followers sharp showers and hot sweats ere they win to the top of the mountain. But still our soft nature would have heaven coming to our bedside when we are sleeping and lying down with us, that we might go to heaven in warm clothes. But all that came there found wet feet by the way, and sharp storms did take the hide off their face, and found twos and fro's and ups and downs and many enemies by the way. It doesn't say who said that originally, but the way that she has this spaced out, it's like as though that somebody else had said that. That's one of the few things I don't like about this book, is sometimes you can tell that she's quoting somebody, but she doesn't always write down who that was. I kind of wish I knew who some of these people were sometimes. But anyway, then she says, this is her, these are her words right here. "It is always the quick answer, the simple solution we look for, entirely forgetting that heaven doesn't come to our bedside. The violent," Jesus said, "take it by force. I tried to tell myself that it was not the waiting or the separation or the uncertainty that was hardest to take, but the silence." August 17th, 1948. "Silence begins to drag on my soul. It is a kind of waiting which hears no voice, no step, sees no signs. I feel that I could wait 10 years if it were not the waiting, this silence. I have spent the evening by a little pool which was held by the silent sky in its heart. There was no ripple, no stir. Lord, let me be that pool." That dragging on of the soul, that stretched out agony of longing, what are these but sharp showers, hot sweats, wet feet, of which that old Saint Rutherford wrote so often? Okay, so this is from, okay, she does explain in this case. "His letters are so full of them. There have never been any other route to glory. One of the earliest stories of Israel to the story of his son's journey is, as a man on earth, God has been bringing men always through much tribulation. There is no strawberry shortcut. What was necessary for God to test the fiber of his children for 40 years in the wilderness? Wouldn't 40 days have been enough? The process must go on and on and on. And on." John Buchchin? Is that supposed to be Bunyan, but it was a typo? Unless it is supposed to be John Buchchin. Buchan. I'm not sure if that's a typo, if that's supposed to be Bunyan, or if that is Buchchin. But anyway, he puts it this way: "You have chosen the roughest road, but it goes straight to the hilltops. Through the affairs of the heart, God uncovers our true intentions. Whether or no it was your heart to keep his commandments, he humbled you and made you hungry, then he fed you on manna. But it was not manna that people wanted. It was leeks and onions and garlic. It was meat and bread, wine and oil, ordinary food. So it is with us. We're created men and women. If Adam and Eve, and she was willing, and she was made for him, isn't it natural then? Isn't it altogether fitting and proper that men and women should hunger for each other? It is natural indeed. However, it's not the only thing God has in mind for us. We are not meant to live merely by what is natural. We need to learn to live by the supernatural. Ordinary fare will not fill the emptiness of our hearts. Bread will not suffice. We need extraordinary fare. We need manna. How else will we learn to eat it if we are never hungry? How educate our tastes for heavenly things if we are not suffited with earthly? Sex will simply not suffice any more than bread will." My heart was saying, "Lord, take away this longing, or give me that which I long." The Lord was answering, "I must teach you to long for something better. He fed you on manna, which neither you nor your fathers had known before, to teach you that man cannot live on bread alone, but lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord." Okay, so pause for a second. It's almost like it's as if she's suggesting that at one point, with her waiting for her then-boyfriend, but eventually this guy would be her husband, Jim Elliot, because her name in this book is, as the cover says, is Elizabeth Elliot. And that'd be an amazing coincidence if her last name was Elliot before she got married to this guy. But point being, while she's waiting for this guy, as he's off, I forget what she said he's doing, but it's not that he just ditched her. He's off doing something school-related, if I remember that right. I forget what she said earlier in the book. But At one point, I guess she's hinting that she's thinking about sex. That's a natural tendency we all have. The idea of that sexual longing, that is a true thing. And we have to be very careful of that. You know, that's actually one of the things we had the discussion of yesterday is people were asking the question of how come Adam and Eve had their genitals if children were born into sin, almost wondering if having sex was a result of sin. And I said, well, you know, by that logic, all sin would be sinful, would it not? And there is such a thing as holy sex. You know, we, you know, the church is very strong about advocating the importance of sex between a man and a woman that are married before God. And you know, it's one of the most toughest and probably one of the most ignored doctrines of the Christian faith is you gotta wait. You gotta wait before you get married. Because there's a lot of situations that you get tempted from. You know, I'll admit, you know, I didn't really wait when it came to my wife, and luckily the Lord still made that work out, but what if it didn't? What if it didn't? If I could go back in time, I should be more strong and clear about that. But there's a lot of things I didn't understand. There's a lot of things I was confused about. And she's longing for this, but as one of the many things she's longing for, but she knows it's something that she can't do at the moment. And one of the reasons why she explains is because these cravings are no different than someone who craves bread when they're hungry. It's not going to be truly satisfying when you just want to try to get a quick bite. And that's true. You know that our world is saturated with sex so much, and it promises if you do the quick fix, then things will be much better. And we can't be that way. We can't fall for these deceptive lies because sometimes sex makes things worse. It makes things more complicated than they need to be. I think that's one reason why God had it for a husband and wife. Because it shows patience and it shows restraint, you know. It also shows that you have a stronger relationship, that you're willing to join together when you get married rather than you're just willing to do it whatever to whoever to wherever, you know. It's kind of sad that some people have no problem with having such a less passionate form of themselves and just make it whatever, you know. But let's continue the reading. God knew that giving me Jim when I wanted him would not provide the far more important training I needed for things to come. I was in learning to eat that living bread, sufficient always for one day at a time, not in advance for the 5 years I feared that I taught and disciplined and prepared for later things. July 6th, from Robert Louis Stevenson, if anyone can carry his burden, however heavy, until nightfall, anyone can do his work, however hard, for one day. Anyone can live sweetly, patiently, lovingly, purely, till the sun goes down. And this is all that life really means. Take, therefore, no thought for the morrow. Give us this day our daily bread. As thy days, so shall thy strength be. Matthew 6:34, Matthew 6:11, Deuteronomy 33:25. Walk down by the little stone wall tonight. The grass was soft and wet to my bare feet. Saw a star fall, just a silver inch of light in the darkness. Quickly gone. The memory of its beauty is a lovely parable. July 7th. Daily light is perfect for this morning, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. Hebrews 5:8. How could the Son of Man need to learn obedience? Another translation of that last verse speaks of the school of suffering. Christ took the course. He asks us to take it too, but not alone. He calls us into the comradeship of fellow students, disciples, willing to undergo the rigorous program that the Father prescribes for the Son. It's the same figure of speech used in Deuteronomy for the Israelites. Take this lesson to heart, that the Lord your God was disciplining you as a father disciplines his son. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a rich land of streams, of springs and underground waters gushing out in hill and valley. It is a land where you will never live in poverty, nor want for anything. The only thing I could imagine that fitted that description was one where I would be Jim's wife. That would be a rich land. There would be streams, springs, waters gushing out, every kind of thirst quencher. There would surely, even if we lived in a tent or a thatched hut, we would never live in poverty or want anything. I had much to learn. Jesus was saying to me what he said to his disciples. There's still much I could say to you, but the burden would be too great for you now. End of chapter 24. She was saying to herself that she needed to be patient, and she wanted to really undertake what the Lord was trying to push on her to solidify the relationship more, make it something that they would want to stay together for the rest of their lives and something that they could yearn for each other. She's definitely encouraging passion, that's for sure. The idea of having those type of feelings for your husband and wife. And I know they're not married yet at this part of the story, but, you know, it's that important understanding that that is what we ought to be when it comes to our husbands and wives. We ought not to get married just because, oh, I got her pregnant by accident, or well, these details work out for me, and she seems like a nice person, so, yeah. You know, there's a lot of reasons why some people get married. Some people get married for money, some people get married for the sex, and some people get married for, just seems like it's a good idea, kind of. And some people get married because they had too much to drink. There's a lot of things that could be said, but I think one point that Elizabeth Elliot's trying to make with this chapter is when it comes to sex, when it comes to marriage, they need to be really well thought out. They can't just be just to satisfy an urge or a craving, and that we have to develop that relationship first, and, you know, get married, of course, before we even consider that sexual contact. And I think that she was getting impatient about certain things, including sex is one of those things, but, you know, to the glory of the Lord, she understood that. Chapter 25. Nobody knows the trouble. August 13th. What his own soul has felt as bitter pain from making others feel, should man abstain? And if Amy Carmichael's, if I make much of anything appointed, magnify it secretly to myself, or insidiously to others, if I let them think it hard, if I look back longingly upon what it used to be, and linger among the byways of memory, so that my power to help is weakened, then I know nothing of Calvary love. Dear Lord, thou art, knowest the innermost workings of my mind and heart. Keep the level of my love in Christ. Never lower. Thou hast said, neither are my ways your ways. Help me to walk in thine, Lord, in peace. Few things I have the power to make us feel sorry for ourselves, as has loneliness. We feel marooned, cheated. Everyone else in the world seems to have somewhere to go, someone to be with, someone to enjoy. We alone have been excluded. We simply want to wallow. Yeah, I've definitely gone through that before. That's one thing that I'm glad I don't have to go through anymore, is I've been married for 5 years and have dated my wife So it's like almost 9 years ago, and those were difficult times before I eventually met my now wife. The idea of trying to look for somebody and trying to be a certain way and worrying if I'm not this way enough and so on and so forth. And it's sad. It's difficult to go through sometimes, but from my experience, the Lord provided. And it's my hope and prayer that those who are single, who may have this issue, that the Lord would provide for them too. For me, this temptation was strong. I was still in Oklahoma. There was still no link of any kind with Jim. I found something stronger than temptation, however. In the words of the Tamil proverb and Amy Carmichael, it helped me to develop soul intensile strength, resistance to stress, the kind of strength that can bear stretching without tearing apart. If I had been 30 years later, I would have been reading an altogether different kind of advice, I suppose. That encourages us to make others feel our pain as vividly as possible, to make much of anything appointed. There is a tendency, an encouragement of weakness in its tendency. An encouragement of weakness in this tendency. It is one thing to try to feel another's pain. We are to bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill Christ's law. He bore our griefs, infirmities, and sorrows, but we are also told to bear our own burdens. This must mean shoulder them bravely, to think twice before laying them on to the shoulders of others who may be more heavily laden than we are. It means that the Tamil proverb means, above all, it means learning Calvary love, forgetting once of oneself in order to be strong to serve. I was not strong in myself, if I had never known that before, but of course I had. I became acutely conscious of it through loving and missing the desperately needing Jim. It was a kind of weakness that surprised and humiliated me. Why should I need him? Go along without him before I met him. Gonna get along without him now, to paraphrase an old song. I wasn't doing very well without him, and there was another lesson. When there is real weakness, especially of the kind that surprises and humiliates us, it is our opportunity to learn what Paul had to learn through his thorn. The grace of God is all we need. For power comes to its full strength in weakness. My prayers were something like this: For my loneliness, Lord, your strength. For my temptation to self-pity, Lord, your strength. For my uncontrollable longings for this man, Lord, your strength. Jesus knew human loneliness in its most poignant forms. As a boy of 12, he was misunderstood by his earthly parents. His obedience to his heavenly Father caused them grief. He was usually with clouds who came after him to see what they could get out of him or to criticize, cross-examine, attack, and with those 12 whom he chose as his inmates, there were arguments, misunderstandings, or intimates. In the hour of his greatest need, abandonment, only in the flesh could Christ enter into our destiny, understand our temptations, and be fully Redeemer and Savior, who can save us, who does not come down into our sufferings and experience our pangs. There was nothing I was experiencing that he had not been through in some form. Love is that everlasting had entered this world, my world, my very heart, known its struggles, shared its weaknesses and perplexity. None of those things then would separate me from his love. They would, in fact, give me the opportunity to experience it, to learn to cry, Abba, Father. In that cry, the Spirit of God joins with our spirit in testifying that we are God's children. And if children, then heirs, we are God's heirs and Christ's fellow heirs, if we share his sufferings now in order to share his splendor afterward. End of chapter 25. That's interesting. She's going through a tough, difficult time, worried about her getting lonely and wondering if she just give up. You know, we have those feelings too, don't we? But again, she eventually gets married to Jim. And again, I eventually married my wife. There are times when, even though those feelings really stink to feel, we have to be patient. Let's see, we're at 26, and this one's actually a longer chapter. I'm gonna read it, but we'll probably go over time, just so you're aware, okay? Chapter 26, A Letter at Last. When our paths to my intense joy crossed in September of 1948, Jim told me he felt that God had given the liberty to start a correspondence. We talked again about marriage, puzzling over the thought that for us it might not amount to an admission that Christ was not sufficient. This idea came out of Jim's reading of 1 Corinthians 7:37. But if a man is steadfast in his purpose, being under no compulsion and has complete control of his own choice, and if he has decided in his own mind to preserve his partner and her virginity, he will do well. Jim had underlined in the hymnal that he had given me the hymnal, "Have I an object, Lord, below which would divide my heart with thee?" If marriage was not to be for us, then Christ was going to have to suffice. If with himself he was going to give us marriage also, then we would receive it as his gift. The thing about gifts is that they are not asked for, but given freely and out of love. It seemed too good a thing to hope for, but we hoped. As the train took me to Bible school in Alberta, Canada, I was reading the book of Colossians as we crossed the bleak prairie of North Dakota. God's great secret, Christ in you, warnings about forced piety, self-mortification, severity to the body. How could I tell if this was what I was guilty of? Often during that school year, our principal, L.E. Maxwell, would say, "The hardest thing in the world is," and he would let the students finish it, "to keep it balanced." I was finding that true. October 4th, 1948, the girl who delivered the mail in the dormitory slipped the first letter from Jim under the door. I opened it with shaking fingers. I was hoping he would begin with "Dearest Bet," but he took refuge in the single ministerial word, "Beloved." This letter was typewritten, which made it seem impersonal and also caused me to wonder if he would be filing carbon copies. Jim wrote, "It's hard to pull out of the nebulae that is collected in," whatever nebulae means, "in thinking about this letter, some clever point with which to express you right off, so I won't attempt it, but proceed as if I had been writing in my present time. Got your card Wednesday afternoon. Clever, devastatingly so. The card said only, 'Miss you, Bet.' I wish I had a philometer to just transcribe what was going on inside for the last few days. It began with that word I think I spoke to you of when we were together in the chapel that last morning, trembling. And what should a toughie like me be trembling about? Three things: you, me, and God. You. I tremble. Forwardness in declaring my feeling to you is actually affecting your entire life. I have an idea that it would be almost impossible to discern the Lord's mind for you without your struggling through a maze of thought and feeling about me. You must know a bit of this already in putting an application to a mission board in Africa. And what if in a real test your feeling should overcome your faith? Who's then the responsibility? Not entirely yours. For this I fear, that I stepping out of the path of the Lord for just a moment should draw you with me, and thus be accountable for the loss of two lives, me. I cannot for the life of me understand my heart. Somewhere down deep in the murky pools of consciousness, there's a great monster whom I will name Watt. This is the only constraint about thing, constant thing about me. Desire. Much to Freud's consternation, I cannot name it sex urge, for I have found that such will not glut the maw of the brute. He demands more of a varied diet, and one not so easily obtained as that, either. I am very thankful that the Buddhist nirvana is not an apex of the spiritual life, or I should be the very least spiritual of all men, if absolute citation were the ideal. The brute is not the spirit or the soul, at least of all, he is the body. Rather, he is the me that talks about all these other things, argues about them, laughs, and asks for more. He is life. He is submerged down there, a lustig after something he cannot name. The nearest he can get to it is with the word God. God feeds him when I allow it. Silly, isn't it? For who then am I? Well, I didn't intend that this should run into the metaphysics, but what I want to say is that there is within a hunger after God. God, or given of God, filled by God, I can only be happy when I am conscious that he is doing what he wills to do within. What makes me tremble is that I might allow something else, you for an example, to take the place that my God should have. Now something tells me that I can, maybe I have them both. I am not adverse to this, understand, I only tremble that I should think wrongly in supposing that you are one of the ways in which God intends to come in. So he's subtly hinting that he's feeling the exact same way that she's been feeling throughout these various chapters we've read. These two are very sophisticated people. God, or better, the Lord Jesus, I tremble lest I should in any way offend my eternal lover, and whatever passes between us, let us take note of this. All shall be revoked at his command. I am such a great cumbersome boar to be dove-driven. Oh, how delicate are the tuggings of my beloved, and how callous my responses. Above all else, I will that he might find in me the travail of his soul and be satisfied. But this is a hard thing when I speak to him, or speak to you, for somehow the pleasing him and getting you are in conflict. I don't pretend to explain that. I can only describe what I feel, and that not very adequately. Since you left, it has been as if a film has been going over my soul. The genuine fervor and prayer was gone for two days. Too much rubble so that I could not get to the building, the wall. See Nehemiah 4:10 for this. Notice, it was not the outward opposers that hindered the work, so much as the inward clutter. Not destruction from the outside, so much as decay within. But the proof of God's hand comes in the affirmative answer to Sanballat's mocking in verse 2. Will they revive the stones out of the heap of rubbish which are burned? The zealous Jews did. Apply this to us and imagine a little while. Are we willing to build with a trowel in one hand while our other hand grasps the sword? The building, God's work, must go on. And if there is to be battle as we build, very well, let us strengthen the lower places. And I say to you the words of Nehemiah to the nobles, the work is great, we are separated. God shall fight for us. I must confess to you, Bet, that I have had regrets about going even as far as we did in physical contact. And that was very little, as most judge. We must guard against this if we are to ever be together again, for it gave me a whetted appetite for your body that I might have found to be rubble in getting to the work. So yeah, even he's thinking about sex too. That's kind of funny. They're both on the same page here. You must be hard on me in this. I know we do not have the same mind or makeup, and I feel that I need more of you than you need of mine. Nietzsche has a word for us here. One must discontinue being feasted upon when one tasteth best, that is known by all who want to be long loved. Do you get what he means by this? Far too long hath there been a slave and tyrant concealed in woman. On that account, woman is not capable of friendship. She knoweth only love. This is what I found in Billy, neither a worshipper, although he found me, nor an overlord, though he was most esteemed. We met as equal dogs at the feet of the Omnipotent. I would have it this way with you and me. Fear not to hurt me with the living sword. Yea, strike me to this purpose. Be more than a lover. Be a friend. We spoke of this at the moon rising tryst. Love one another as I have loved you, remember? But how shall I praise the Lord for removing the film this very morning? Confession is good for the soul. It was imperative for mine this morning. I cast it all upon him and John's truth about cleansing from all sin. Cleansing from all sin was very precious. How sweetly he preached peace. I keep losing my place. To one that was far off, Ephesians 2:13-17. Nearness was the theme of my song, and the thought seemed well expressed in Psalm in 136, little flock hymnal. The veil is rent, our souls draw near unto the throne of grace. The merits of the Lord appear, they fill the holy place. O Betts, let us undistracted be in our following. Just to show you what a poor journalist I am, I will quote my time in composition of this letter, 2 hours. Part of it due to typing, I'm sure. Have you been delivered after the fashion of Psalm 116? Thou hast delivered my soul from death, mine eyes from tears, and my feet falling. Tenderly, Jim. End of chapter 26. Okay, so we're going to have to end the reading for today, but it's very interesting that she's feeling this way and longing for him and wondering if he's the same way. And as it turns out, yes, he's very much the same way. You know, that's even more so the important reason of developing that relationship and having that patience, because I'm not saying that every person is meant to have such a poetic dialogue with each other, but these are two intellectuals, these are two Christians of the faith that want to serve God and really take their mission very seriously, and let alone any sort of relationship that they have in general very seriously too. And I think we've lost that in our culture to a degree, and we need to get that back. But that's all the time we got for today. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for the Bible study. We should have a Bible study show tomorrow, unless I oversleep. I was this close to oversleeping and woke up at like 5:57, hence all the yawning. But thank you, guys. God bless you, and see you again.